This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, hello. 11th of June. Hooray. My name is Ben Kopinski, and with me is Sia Sangweni.
Good morning.
And this is the Gareth Lift Show.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it was the strangest thing. I walked in this morning. So on Fridays, what normally happens is, Fridays is a very fun day here at Cliff Central. There's the sex show, there's the comedy show, there's Casper de Vries' show. Loads of things happening. And when I was leaving on Friday, there was a massive truck with like a whole bunch of plants.
Oh.
But it looked like... Because it's a very strange kind of place where we work here. There's film sets, there's recording studios, there's a lot of things that go on here. And it looked like they were basically going to shoot, I don't know, Anaconda 7 with J-Lo's ass again. Like, there was just plants everywhere. And again, to the studio now. So, yeah, what's the full story here? Because there's plants everywhere. I mean, I'm looking for an iguana.
No, we're getting a full-on facelift, courtesy of the people at Lifestyle Home Garden. And, you know, week after week, we get tips from them. We've been talking about different things, the benefits
on Fridays,
of
okay.
plants. Yes. So on Friday morning, they literally came with this massive truck. It looked like a moving truck, and basically offloaded a mini forest for us. So if you ever come and visit Cliff Central, we'll be posting pictures as well if you aren't able to ever stop by. We have a whole situation here.
Let's not push the visit. Okay, we've gone through this.
Look,
we like people, we don't like them that much.
I like people that much. I'll open up these doors and I'll welcome people. It's fine.
Okay. No. Sierra really will. Open arms. So I'll put it onto the Gareth Cliff Show Instagram account, do a little live video in a bit.
Yeah, it's quite a lot, isn't it?
It's great. But like, I'm looking everywhere. Every single corner's got something. It's almost like we now need an office pet. Let's get a big lizard. Gareth loves lizards.
Oh, yeah, of course he does. No, he does not.
We can call him Chonchi, the iguana.
And are you going to take care of Chonchi? And
until 9 every day, sure. Okay.
And then who takes care of Chonchi afterwards?
Sure, imagine how Jane would get a fright.
Anyway, well, already it's a lot of weight on our strange shoulders because, you know, different plants have to be watered at different times. And
oh, right.
Yeah, some are watered 3 times a week, others are once a week, others are every single day.
Okay, I think that's the video. We're going to interview Jane and this dilemma of how she has to not do work. It's going to be incredible for her.
Of how she actually has to do work.
Yeah, so it's a Monday, and Sia, that means that the weekend has just passed.
Yes.
It was as good as mine. I'm sure you're pretty happy. What'd you get up to?
Yo, what didn't I get up to this weekend?
No,
not in that way. But I really did have a nice, varied weekend. Started off Friday afternoon. Oh, yes. Okay. Now, you sometimes in these moments, you actually need to remember and remind yourself. So, yes, Friday afternoon went off to meet with a couple of friends. And that was cool. Just actually, you know, it's now getting to, you know, those colder months. And my friends and I are just very honest about things. As much as we love spending time with each other, we also don't really like to be out in winter. So now really like a good night out ends at about like 7 p.m.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, so that you're back home soon. And then Saturday, y'all. Oh, Saturday was good. Saturday was really good. Went off to the Westcliff, you know, the Westcliff Hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
And how fancy that is.
Yeah.
There was a champagne party thrown by a champagne brand. And when they do something like that, it's like champagne is everywhere you look. You know, the same way there's a tree now in the studio?
Yeah.
Everywhere you look.
There's bottles.
There was a bottle everywhere. It reminded me, and I think it's something about the venue, it was very Great Gatsby-esque. The centerpiece even was massive champagne flutes that were all stacked up on each other. So it was literally like the champagne flute pyramid situation.
Yes. They pour at the top.
All I just remember was it was actually quite messy. It was a great party, and I went home at about like 1 a.m. God bless the guy who had to drive me home because I was a mess. I got back home, and this is when social media really is not the best idea, or rather idiots like me don't utilize it in the best way possible, because I went live on Instagram.
In the back of a drunken Uber.
like, I don't remember when it started, but I just know that it sort of finished with me on my kitchen floor with some popcorn, and somehow all the popcorn was missing my mouth and ended up on my floor, and that's where I passed out. So my sister wakes me up on Sunday morning because she came over to visit me. She's like, "Do you know what you did last night?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? I went to a party, I had a great time, I came back home." She's like, "No, check your Instagram." And there was this 18 minute long video of me being a total buffoon. And they were like, all of my exes had watched it. Some future crushes had watched it. Thank goodness I'm not in like a...
Nice, yeah. Just always express yourself.
I'm so classy, aren't I? So I had to spend Sunday indoors just getting over that horrible incident. But other than that, yeah, it was good. It was a good weekend.
All right. Well, just stick with the dramatic. Anthony Bourdain is no longer with us. He was not any of our death lists, was he?
No, he wasn't. And did you know him before? Like, I've seen...
He's one of those sort of, like, cult characters, okay? So, celebrity chef, right?
You look long enough,
you start hallucinating. He's one of those guys that he delivers great quotes. I mean, he was a very... Screen and real-life moments, like his feuds with other celebrity chefs, however. He had feuds.
I admire about Paula Deen and her life, but I think this cynical decision to, on one hand, sell people... you know, her brand is... excess without guilt, and was for many years.
Number 5, when he visited a strip club with Alton Brown in Atlanta.
Come here for some ribs and some more beer after. Wake up in your room, you're all sticky with barbecue sauce. That's a successful evening.
The premise of the layover...
Yeah, like, he did a lot of great shows, and obviously he was a very successful author, and he lived life to the absolute fullest. And yeah, he just sort of decided, that's what I'm checking out. So he took his own life at the age of 61. But yeah, Kitchen Confidential was one of the best shows that never got a second season, and it was pretty much based around him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great show with
that person,
Bradley Cooper. he was the chef, kind of similar to this kind of person. There was obviously a lot of different sort of similarities around the personalities and his take towards food and to people expressing themselves. So no doubt you'll wake up today and look through the news, look through social media. If you haven't seen it already in the weekend, people will be quoting stuff that he's been saying, because we always remember and care about people a lot more once they die. That is who we are as people.
I just think it's so sad.
It is a bit. It's like 61. I mean, he's obviously done everything, and you never know. Like, we've spoken about suicide in the show quite a lot, and you never know the personal choice that people make or why they make them or the merits of that. But yeah, there you go. So... he wasn't on our death list, though, so we still haven't... I'm not being sensitive here. I just got to keep it on track. Just got to keep on track, so yeah.
Did you just mind what you said? You just said I'm not being sensitive.
Insensitive. I said insensitive.
It's a good slip-up, because it is honest, though. Yeah, I really do find it sad. You're 61 years old. You are successful. You know, on paper, you have everything that people would envy. But evidently, you know, when you are going through something, you're going through something. And for him, he saw suicide as the only option. And yeah, I don't know what's happening right now, but you've heard, like, this last week even, there was just a bunch of suicides. Even the designer Kate Spade, who committed suicide last week. Yeah, once again, a person who has everything going for her on paper, and she just decided to commit suicide. What I think is even more heartbreaking is that she has a 13-year-old daughter. I definitely know it's a teenage, yeah, it's a 13-year-old daughter. And she was married, and reports are now saying that her husband had been trying to get a divorce for the longest of time. Right. And she didn't want to, and you know, that was where a lot of her depression and anxiety, because she was diagnosed with this while she was still alive, stemmed from. And reports are also adding that her suicide note was just a simple one-liner to her daughter saying, "Bea, I've always loved you. This is not your fault. Ask Daddy." Which I think... you know, take whatever you're going through aside. I'm not here as a therapist, but this is going to mess the kid up even more. Because now the kid is still young. Basically, you're saying, look, like, your dad is this horrible person. This is why you don't have a mother anymore. So don't even, you know, love or appreciate this man who you left with. Oh, that this kid is not going to be the same after this. So
yeah, because you always think like people, there's always more questions than answers on when these things kind of happen. Mm. But that's quite a defining final moment.
Ask daddy. That's it.
Yowzers. Right. So look, we didn't mean to get the show off into a bit of a somber start. All right. Today, but there you go. So.
Let's move on. What did you get up to this weekend? You went golfing.
Yeah, I had a great weekend. So Friday in Johannesburg is always a great day because people work hard here, and then Friday comes around and it's just like so much to do, and it's happy, and the sun always shines here because it's a happy place in that respect. Played golf. See, I had 6 birdies in one round. I birdied a third of the golf course. Just nod.
That's great.
I'm incredible. The most I ever had in my entire life. 6 birdies. If you play golf, 6 birdies, you are literally high-fiving your phone right now. I know you. I can feel you. I can feel you. Wait, 6 birdies, 4 of which are tap-ins. Owned it.
What is the golfing? What do you guys do in winter? Because it is chilly. Do you just...
It's great. Winter, like, Joburg's the best place in the entire world to play golf. It is the greatest golfing city in the entire world. Wherever you are in the world right now, you are not the best place to play golf. It is Johannesburg.
Okay.
So summer is obviously very lush, and the course is obviously very green and beautiful, and then you get these great thunder showers in the afternoon. It's all very dramatic, all very pretty.
Mm.
And then winter, everything becomes very sunny and very hard and very dry, which is great because it's kind of like links-style golf. Ball runs very far. You get a little bit more wind. It's so playable. It's perfect. So you're still playing in, like, you know, a shirt. There's no big, like, baggy jerseys and all that kind of crap. And it's amazing. A friend of mine was out from Germany, so he flew down to play around a golf, and then went back because he was in Kenya, so he thought he was kind of in the area. So he came down.
Kind of in the area?
Yeah,
what?
He took some people out.
Kenya and South Africa?
Yeah, well, he's going to play golf.
Wait.
And then another friend of mine came up here for the weekend from Cape Town, so we played golf on Saturday, and then the rugby. Wow, like, it was just the best sporting weekend in so many different aspects. It was
actually
so incredible.
Yeah. Comrades, the rugby.
Well, yeah, I mean, Comrades is a distressing life choice, but yeah, everything else is really, really good. So if you are a sports fan, wow, so much to touch into 6:30. And of course, it's also World Cup week, which is like...
Hold on a second. Did you say... I'm sorry I'm late. Traffic, I don't know what happened there, but did you just say you got 6 birdies?
In one round. Best ever of my life. Look, I cocked up a few of the holes. So I only shot 76.
See, do you know what that means? So if it's
I
a
just
par,
know birdies
okay,
a big
I,
deal.
I'll try and explain it like another idiot who doesn't know a lot about golf.
Okay.
If it's a par 3, that means you have 3 shots to get to the hole. To get par. Got it?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's a par 5. You've got 5 shots to get to the hole.
Mm-hmm.
If Ben got 6 birdies, that means on 1/3 of the course, you said?
A birdie, 1/3 of the course.
He got under par by 1.
I'm already confused. 1/3 of the course, that would be...
That's like professional...
There's 18 holes. There's like, 6 of them.
If someone does that in the Nedbank Golf Challenge,
mm-hmm.
when you're usually drunk and you're not paying attention to the golf anyway,
they'd
probably win.
Well, okay, they wouldn't get the bogeys I got because then I got bogeys and I'm a risk-reward kind of player. I go for things.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I almost got 2 hole-in-ones. Literally, I hit it like cock's length. Okay, granted, black, but I hit it cock's length on like 2 of the holes. It was just a sensational time. It was great. It was fun.
Is this you trying to make me interested in golf now?
Cockling. Inadvertently, maybe.
Okay, now I'm in it.
Yeah. So Gareth here. Hi, Gareth. We've got no mubs today. She's got her other job is demanding that she's doing a production something at 7.
Yeah, increasingly.
Increasingly. So there we go. So there's your team for this morning. Gareth, can we do a bit of a switcheroo? I've got lots of things to do. I've got to type stuff. I've got to take some photos.
We've got to get to the 5 things you need to know in a minute. So you're going to be privy now to a live switcheroo on the show. Ben and I swap places.
Here's some just endearing words about Anthony Bourdain from Anderson Cooper.
That's where I come from. That's how I'm always going to look at the world. But food isn't everything. And something comes up, I'm happy to get up from the meal and wander off elsewhere.
Anthony Bourdain saw the world and experienced life in a way most people never will. In places near and far, he talked and tasted with open mouth and eyes, an open heart and mind. Over the years, when Anthony returned, we would meet up and discuss the places he'd just been, usually at a restaurant table or in a kitchen, where he'd encourage me to expand my limited culinary curiosity.
Yeah, the word on the street is you hate food.
I am not a big foodie. Yes, that is true.
I thought, what is Anderson really going to be freaked out by? What's really going to offend him?
The smell is already quite
poignant. And terrify him.
That was a thymus gland.
That was a what?
Thymus gland.
Thymus gland. Where would that be?
I think it's somewhere around your neck.
Glad I didn't know before I ate it. What was that?
Aorta.
Aorta. It's aorta from the heart. Got it.
But it's a valve to the heart.
Yeah, no, I'm familiar.
Kind of valve-y.
I didn't know it was edible. I didn't know you could eat an aorta.
You can eat anything, man.
Yeah, well, apparently. Why is it called blood sausage? What is it?
Because it's made from blood. You know, if it's really good, it's kind of squirty.
Oh.
Actually, that's completely delicious.
Anthony loved drinking and eating, tasting the delights of the world, immersing himself in other cultures and countries, bringing the rest of us along on his journey. His shows were full of references to movies he loved, music he worshipped, books he'd read and reread.
It is the setting, an important factor for me, of The Heart of Darkness.
It's my favorite
which,
book.
Which, a book that I'm obsessed with.
Are you really?
Only exceeded by my obsession with Apocalypse Now.
No, this is my favorite movie.
So we pretty much tracked that story arc as a means of exploring the Congo.
As a kid, I wanted to be Colonel Kurtz. I know he wasn't the...
Really?
Yeah, I know. I wanted to be Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now, in the movie. I wanted to have like a Mountain Yard Army... Yeah, that was a strange job.
I'm with you on the Mountain Yard Army for sure. That always sounded cool.
Finally, I've been trying to get in this country 5 years now.
By the time of his death, Anthony had visited more than 80 countries, many of them multiple times. Even if food was not your passion, Anthony could enthrall you with what he saw and learned in the places he went.
And watching your shows, I realize I'm missing out on an entire side of the places that I'm visiting because I'm not experimenting with the food.
But people are telling you a story when they give you food. And if you don't accept the food, you are, in many cultures, whether rural Arkansas or Vietnam, you're rejecting the people. And we see it many, many times. Because I'm accepting the food, even if it's either out of my comfort zone or outright appalling, because I'm nodding, saying yes, I'll try it, thank you, people open up,
right?
And the relationship proceeds from that point and becomes something very, very different. People are often surprised to see Americans, you know, eat their food. They're right. Pleasantly surprised.
I was just surprised by how many people I know were massive Anthony Bourdain fans. Huge, like people I had no idea even cared about that stuff. They were posting things about him. He obviously affected a lot of people, and many people's lives were improved by him, and not just his cooking, but his whole attitude to life. So he seemed like a fun guy. I'm always sad when people like that move on.
Yeah, you know? Just different, like trailblazers.
Yeah, but what we've got to do, and again, I heard you guys saying, you know, you don't want to get too somber for a Monday morning, but what we've got to stop doing is stigmatizing a person's decision to exit. Like, I really think this is a religious impulse that is it makes it very difficult for us to be sensible about suicide. They're never used to, suicide was never a taboo thing. It became a taboo thing under organized religion, because organized religion has this issue with the afterlife. You see, there's an afterlife in traditional religions, mm-hmm. And if you don't believe in an afterlife, or you believe that the gods decide anyway, and that suicide has no impact on that, which is what people believed before sort of fundamental Christianity, Islam, or Judaism, is that you committed suicide because you wanted to go there early. It wasn't a thing to be embarrassed about. It wasn't a thing to be offended by. Oh. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that, you know, there are lots and lots of people who commit suicide because they've had enough. For whatever reason. Now, I'm not going to be the person who judges them. I know people who've committed suicide who've had very good lives. They're not leaving people behind and being selfish. It was just the end. We've got to stop this.
He traveled to 80 countries, like you said, most of the multiples, did everything you could possibly
do. Yeah, he had a great full life.
He had 60, really sad about 61 this guy. Really good years. And again, it's like people know who he was.
The reason people say I'm so sad is because they're sad that they didn't get to spend more time with him or that they didn't get more of him. Now, if you're going to be selfish like that in someone's death, that means you probably didn't care about them that much in life. Mm-hmm. They've decided. Let them go. I know that's hard for most people to accept. I feel the same way. And when something's taken away from you, whether it's a person or a thing, you feel loss. Anthony Bourdain did not have a horrible life. He wasn't committing suicide because there was mental anguish or upset, or not as far as I can tell. He'd had a good life, and then he just decided, you know what? This is as good as it gets. What am I looking at? I'm looking at a lifetime of getting old.
Saggy balls.
Yeah. And he's experienced so much. How do you know that he didn't? Before you climb into me, because a lot of people will say, oh, he might have had mental health issues. Yes, of course he might have. Most of us do at some point. But just as easily, he might not have. He might have been absolutely fine. Maybe he did this because he'd had enough and it was just time to get out. There's something so elegant about, okay, the show's done. Let me get on with it now. I'm going to leave.
There's something so interesting about all this. So we've just played you a clip now as part of CNN's tribute to him.
Uh-huh.
And while this entire thing plays, there's a little box on the screen that's been stuck on the screen from the beginning, a suicide prevention lifeline.
Yeah. See, it gets turned into a you need help thing.
Well, yeah, I definitely hear your point, Gareth. If it is something that somebody wants to do and I don't...
That's not an easy decision. Nobody goes, I feel like going to the cinema today. I feel like committing suicide today.
Yeah, I don't know. I still personally feel bad if there's a mental illness involved.
The suicides are alive right now. Anyone who was successful at suicide is gone, right?
Yeah.
So let me try and speak on their behalf. I have no idea. Each and every individual case may have its own merits and demerits.
Mm.
But let me be the first person to be brave enough to attempt to say that some people's suicides, they want to work and they've had enough and they want to go. How about
true.
That? Must we think that every single person who commits suicide is making a terrible mistake? How arrogant is that? Must we imagine that every person who's had enough in this world is not doing that after a carefully sober, sane think through of the possible ramifications? It's just something to consider.
Mm.
I don't expect everybody to immediately jump to an answer. I don't know all the answers here either. And certainly there are lots of people who, you know, for very bad reasons, commit suicide. There's too much pressure, there's anguish, there are family issues, there are relationship issues, there's trauma. Who knows? But some of them, at least a few of them, have decided that that's just the most elegant way to finish the story.
Yeah, if that was the case.
If that was the case, then good for you. And if Anthony Bourdain is one of those people, good for him. Good for him.
Hanging yourself using a hotel
bathrobe
belt.
Jesus.
He was with the CNN crew because he was filming something.
Yeah.
He went up to his hotel room. Everyone else was downstairs at dinner. And they started just looking at the clock. Like, it's very weird. Like,
it's dramatic.
He would be here by now. And that's when they found him in his hotel room hung with the hotel bathroom belt.
Wow. All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just awful. Listen, I'll tell you what we're doing later on. We're going to speak to a guy who is a polyamorist.
That's when you've got lots of wives.
That's right.
Yes.
And he has intimate relationships or the desire for and practices intimate relationships with more than one partner, with the knowledge of all the other partners.
In other words, he's got a big penis. Because these women won't stick around for nothing average.
So we'll find out what that's all about a little bit later on. I'm very excited about that.
You dismiss my theories, yeah?
Because, I don't know, we have to be very technical with
guys,
this conversation.
To be a polyamorous, you can't just be running in there with like a Vienna.
No.
You need to be swinging something. You need to be bringing something to the bri.
I don't want to think about that.
All right, listen, we've got to move on. Five things you need to know this morning. So let's get stuck in it. And these are the five big stories of the day. First of all, Zweli Mkhize denies the malicious allegations of a 4.5 million rand kickback. Yep, the Sunday Times reported that a Joburg law firm claimed that they were acting on behalf of Zonke Zizwe Investments and have named Mkhize in a legal claim against a company called Afric Oil. Yo, if you're a politician and you've done any dodgy dealings, they are going to come and get you. There is no way you can hide your trail like you might have been able to do once. So, here he is, Zweli Mkhize, who's up to now been one of those people who everyone thought was beyond reproach. Mm-hmm. He seems to have been clean. He seems to have been the guy who was, when he was Treasurer General, the ANC, trying to bring in legitimate money to politics. Well, look at what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So these allegations, he's of course denied, and they link him to an illicit payment for helping an oil company to secure a loan from the Public Investment Corporation. If this is true, there it is, out in the open, another example of someone who is trying to crook the system. Marley van Breda's future care and curatorship is a matter to be heard by the Western Cape High Court. They're expecting to hear about her future care arrangements and whether the current curator's appointment should be extended on Monday. Of course, now, you know, a whole lot of money has been released with Henry van Breda being sentenced. So Marley now is the issue.
Mm.
Who's going to look after her? Where's she going to go? And they published a picture of her. It was actually supplied by the family, which is interesting. Because usually they've either blurred it out or they've used a very old photograph. The court will hear proceedings on today, after it was postponed last month, to allow the curator, Louise Beekman, to allow her to file a report. So she had been appointed the curator 3 years ago after Marley's parents were killed, along with Rudy, in their De Zelza estate when Henry killed them. Marley survived the attack but sustained serious brain injuries and suffered from retrograde amnesia. And remember, it was extended despite this, the fact that she turned 18. So now they're going to decide what to do with her from here on in.
Hmm.
It's got to be tough, right?
So freaking tough.
Okay, other news. A changed era. Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un are in Singapore. It's happening.
Ah, so neutral territory.
Yeah, whether people like it or not, it's going ahead, their discussions. And do you think it's going to be tremendous and terrific and great and fantastic, Ben?
Of course.
Because Trump is involved. Of course it will be.
Well, Mike Pompeo, who's the Secretary of State, is also in Singapore. He said in a tweet that Washington was committed to the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. So there it is. It's all going to happen. That's good news for the world if you can get this right. Meanwhile, US-Canada disputes have escalated after a very tense G7 in Canada. There's that picture going around, I don't know if you've seen it, of Donald Trump sitting with his arms folded, Angela Merkel leaning over the table in a very domineering pose, kind of, you could see she's like giving him the get-go, and Justin Trudeau and a couple of others. I saw the Japanese Prime Minister. They were all standing around. But let me tell you, if a man was looming over a woman instead of Angela over Donald, let's say it was the other way around, people would accuse him of like using aggressive body language and all kinds of things. This fucking Angela Merkel looks like she's about to eat his face off. And just because she's a woman, she can get away with that stance. Let me tell you something, it's pretty goddamn offensive. Someone leaned into me like that. Big German titten in my face. I'd be very, very nervous if
Big
I were
German
Donald
what?
Trump. Große deutsche titten.
There's so many amazing memes around Donald this weekend. My favorite was, so Angela Merkel saying next to Justin from Canada.
Yeah.
And Donald's looking at both of them. And the caption is, listen here, German Hillary. You shut up or I'll slap your Canadian girlfriend.
Oh, man.
Well, good for Donald. He stood his ground, and good for Angela for trying to push back. And then finally, they found a guy's body dumped near Lanesia. Mm. The grim discoveries made by a passerby on Saturday who informed the police. Police have arrested a 50-year-old suspect in connection with a murder on a man whose body was found dumped on the K-43 in Lanesia South. It's understood that Panda Khoza of the police says the motive for the murder is being investigated. But there's just this body lying on the side of the road.
It's so freaky.
Can you imagine? Mm. All right, so Anthea is coming in just now. She'll give us a money shot this morning. We've got lots of other good stuff coming. Stick around. But first, Ben, what's in the news? Sports headlines?
Oh, sorry, we're going to skip the cryptos.
Oh, Jesus. All right, sorry. We're all over the place this morning because I got here late. There was
Sierra and I
traffic.
Are pretty solid.
Yeah, you two are. I'm all over the place this morning. At least we managed to get five of the five things you need to know.
Yeah,
that would have been a disaster if it was four. Solid.
Look at us being successful on a Monday morning.
Oh, boy. All right. Bitcoin is currently trading at $6,787. A horrible weekend for Bitcoin and for Ethereum. Ethereum, $532.18. The reason they're so shitty, apparently, is that a big exchange in Korea was hacked over the weekend. So they all started tanking.
While the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yeah, not a good thing. Tell us what's in the sport headlines.
Right, Gareth, Springbok fans actually care about rugby again. The Blitzboks retain the World Series. England loses Scotland in cricket. Dustin Johnson is the world number one again. And it's World Cup week.
All right, let's get stuck into it, shall we? Here it is, a little bit of the sport with Ben. For some reason, now this is not working. Oh, there we go. Hang on. For fuck's sake. No, it's not.
Oh.
Now my computer's giving
me
shit.
Do you want me to sing it?
No, just go. Springbok fans care about rugby again.
Yeah, Blitzboks. That happened.
Just get into it.
Yeah, I can't get this.
So, look, Siya Kolisi's start as the Bok captain was always going to be one with much, much pressure and anxiety from some people. And at 24 points to 3 down, everyone was going, oh, here we go again. The Boks are cuck. Quotas. Rusty's a whatever. Mm. But 24-3, this team was literally, it was shaking like a shitting dog. You know, there were inexperienced players in the back line. The English were running rampant. Ellis Park crowd were looking to start a fight. It was not pleasant. But then, Siya Kolisi stayed calm, along with Dwayne Vermeulen. There were guys talking to each other behind the post. They came back. Faf de Klerk, this guy's been overseas. He's come back like Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. You know when Gandalf came back as the Gandalf the White?
Yes.
He's come back as an even better, more tenacious player than he ever was, despite the fact that all the English forwards were trying to take him out. Faf de Klerk, who looks a bit like Tattoo from Fantasy Island. I mean, this guy, he's 5 foot, not very much, but
five
he
foot,
was.
Not very much?
He was the catalyst for getting the Boks back in this game. He scored a great try, and the Boks played with so much heart, so much passion, so much cohesion. I know it was the first big game of the season, so there were a few mistakes here and there. But it was such an exciting match. I think it'll go down as probably, in my lifetime, one of the top three most exciting Bok test matches ever. And I will include 1995 World Cup final into that. That was a shit game, but because of what was at stake there, it was a good game. I mean, it was like 15-12 or whatever it was in the end. But this match on Saturday, it just so incredible. The Boks eventually got it to a comfortable lead. England scored a late consolation try, so it was a 3-point margin in the end there, 42-39. And now they take a 1-0 lead going to a 3-match series. The next match is in Bloemfontein. Rusty Erasmus has cut the squad a little bit, basically cutting guys who you weren't expecting to play. And unfortunately, Trevor Nyakani will not play the series. He was meant to start on Saturday, but a rib injury has just not gone away. So he'll not be part of the mix. But this team is bloody exciting. As I said on Friday, if we can just manage our expectations with this team, I think it's going to definitely go somewhere. This is a great start. That backline is bloody exciting, and that forward pack, we're only going to get stronger when you think about it. Ibn Espeth's still going to come back. Warren Whiteley's expertise is still going to come back. We've got a really, really great mix of players here, youth experience, the whole deal, and what a start. So people suddenly give a toss about SA Rugby again. I know, like with the guys I play golf with on Saturday, like, oh, we're probably not going to watch the match. Yeah, just general sentiments after 2 years of literally getting beaten by everybody, and people are excited again. So excited. So England lost that match, and then, in a great twist of fate, the English beat Fiji in the Paris Sevens in the quarterfinals. So the Blitzboks got through out of the group stage, and they were to play Spain in the quarterfinals. They only beat Spain 15-10. And while that was kind of, they were chewing on that, the reality of England beating Fiji meant that if the Blitzboks go through and win the whole thing, they can retain the World Series. They beat New Zealand 24-12, and then facing England in the final, this weekend could not have been scripted any better. Facing England in the final, they managed to get it over them as well. So they won that, and with that, they retained their World Series title by all of 2 points.
Wow.
2 points in the end. Fiji failing at the final hurdle, so a very, very tough weekend for them. But the Blitzboks winning, Springboks winning, just so much winning. People are excited. You look around today, and you'll see people will be happier. not
that's,
because
that's terrific.
It's not because they suddenly got a raise. It's not because the petrol price came down. It's not because their sex life's going well. It's because SA Rugby is going well.
Huh.
It is a big deal to a lot of people out there. So let's enjoy that. I sure as hell will.
We have been waiting for some time.
We have been waiting. Damn sure.
All right.
England.
I saw some horrible things, just by the way, about Sia Khaleesi from both sides. Obviously, you hear people, those old kind of old school racists saying, oh, you know, it's the black captain. This is obviously before the match started turning around. And then I also saw some people saying, oh, well, it's because he's got a white wife. You can't win with some people.
No, some people just don't want anyone to be happy or successful.
Because they're miserable.
Yeah.
If you're one of those people, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, must be miserable, all of us.
Correct.
Speaking of England, these guys really are the gift that keeps on giving. They played Scotland yesterday in an ODI match. Scotland batting first, scored 371 for five. England, 365. Scotland beat England in cricket.
That's horrendous.
England are the number one ranked ODI team in the entire world. Scotland, well, Scotland are Scotland. They play golf, they fist fight in Glasgow, and they drink scotch. These guys don't exactly do much in the world of sport. But look at that, Callum McLeod, he scored 140. Now, I know what you're saying, oh, it's one of those teams where like half of them come from Pakistan, you know, like Canada. There's not a single Canadian guy legitimately born from Canada in that team.
Right.
No, Scotland have Scottish people playing for them.
No.
Yeah. Callum McLeod, Scottish.
That's about your Scottish as you're good to get.
140 runs off his bat of 94 balls. And then, the star bowler, Saf Sharaf.
That's not Scottish.
No, he was just the guy who took the last wickets.
In fact, that sounds like a Scottish curse. Someone called Morag is going to put on you if you come too close to her hovel.
Sorry, it was Safyan Sharaf. He got the wicket at the end there, and that was it. England lost to Scotland. Which then the ICC are looking at this and going, ah, shit. Because, you know, they don't care for these small teams playing the World Cup. They've got these strength versus strength World Cups. They talk about globalizing the game, and they go, yeah, but we've got to have the strong teams. Well, here you go. Your number one ranked team just got dicked by Scotland. So have a look at that, ICC. Although, it's not like you care, because you just wait for India to tell you what to do. And no, that's not me being bitter. Just hate those guys. No imagination. F1, there was the Canadian Grand Prix of the weekend. No one really cared about this. There was just so much in the go. Obviously, it was in Canada as well, so it was late at night.
Jeez, everything's in Canada at the moment.
But Sebastian Vettel, he won.
Yeah,
he won. In the French Open, Simona Halep, she won. The Romanian won her first ever Grand Slam title. She was the top seed going into this one, so she won through in that one. Rafael Nadal, yep, course he was going to win that one. Yeah. It's 11 titles now.
I watched that.
That's 11 times that he's bitten that trophy like a caveman.
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
He likes to prove his teeth work.
But why do they bite medals? Why do they bite trophies?
Like, because someone told them once, you've got to check that it's real gold or real silver, and they thought that was how you do it.
I hate these stupid cliches. It's like, yes, it is. Just get over it. Just smile. Don't look like a moron on newspapers around the world.
Imagine someone saying, I'm only going to take the trophy. It's real gold or real silver.
Yeah.
You don't even get to keep the trophy, idiot.
I'm going to bite it and give it back. So I've already bitten it 10 times. So I'm pretty sure it is. Anyway, why does this bother me? It is World Cup week, okay? So what are we going to do every day going into the World Cup is look at one of the favorite teams and tell you why they will or won't win. Today, we're looking at Argentina because that's Gareth's favorite team. Every 4 years, Gareth gives a toss about sport. It's because Argentina play in the World Cup.
Yep.
You can take that up with him in your own time. But Argentina, well, they've had a really rocky run into this World Cup. They were meant to play against Israel in Jerusalem, but no. Palestinians were like, screw this. They protested, all kinds of stuff. Game called off. Then in training, they lost a guy, ruptured a cruciate ligament or something. Yeah, you don't want to ever do that in your life, ever.
Hell no, that's horrible.
Least alone before the World Cup. So he's gone. Lanzini, that's his name. So he got into the starting lineup. He's been playing well the last couple of seasons, but he, you know, that's it. Rupturing tendons, done. Sergio Romero, the Manchester United goalkeeper, he's also out, so he's out of the squad. And if you look at where Argentina have been this season, the Copa America, okay, firstly, they lost the last final. Higuain, as always, had a great chance to score a goal, fluffed it. Messi then cried. Everyone was like, this is his last time. Then Copa America finals, Higuain basically fluffed it every time after that. Messi cries. He then retired. He was so upset and so done with this team, pissing him off. He retired. But they brought him back and they said, okay, Lionel, if you can just give one more World Cup out of you, we'll make sure that Higuain doesn't fuck it up for you. Empty promise, because he's still in the squad. I tell you what, he will fluff it. It'll be entertaining. But if you look how they got through, they had to beat Ecuador really like last minute kind of stuff to get an automatic qualification for this. Out of their 18 matches for qualification, they only scored 19 goals. They haven't had a great run of things. They got absolutely smashed by Spain recently, 6-1 or 5-1 or something along those lines. And, well, they haven't looked like the team that they really want to be. There is still a huge amount of star quality in this, even though their preparations have been pretty dreadful. They haven't played a lot of football. Obviously, so reliant on Messi, they've still got a great squad. They've still got great attacking players. Outside of Higuain, they've got Angel Di Maria, they've got Sergio Aguero. These are good players. It's a strong team, and they have a decent group. Well, all the big teams go into their groups without having too many issues, I'd imagine. So they are in Group D. They've got Croatia, Iceland, and Nigeria. I know what you're saying, Ben. That's a group of death. Iceland are pretty strong. Yes, Croatia's really strong. But Croatia's also got their issues. Luka Modric is in this like financial bollocks at the moment. The team manager, owner, slash whatever, he's being basically jailed for this. And Nigeria, well, as far as Gump said, they're like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in this group, if they're going to show that they are World Cup contenders. I'm going to go with them being semi-finalists at absolute best, though. But they are definitely one of the top four teams that you look at and go, well, you can't write them off. Obviously, you can't write them off. But this World Cup will be more open, I think, than previous years, which we'll get into as we get closer to the actual kickoff. Thursday will be the first match. Russia versus the might of Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
Which would be hugely exciting.
Yeah, but that's you know, I don't know. Do you think that's a great opening match?
Yes, of course it is. Because it's got the... No, it's not.
No, it's bullshit. It's Russia and Saudi Arabia.
Well, okay. So how it all starts is the first match is the host team. Every time. The host team
but will... But Saudi Arabia?
Well,
Jesus.
Gareth, Saudi Arabia is in their group. So that's how they don't go, well, let's just get a marquee pairing in here. Saudi Arabia is part of the group that Russia's in. That'll be the first match. So even though it's not going to please you... Okay. World Cup football's here.
All right. Let's get into
it. So if you were to put money down on a team to win the World Cup, I would say give Argentina a skip. Just they haven't shown anything to suggest.
Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome, Gareth. They haven't shown anything to suggest that they are going to do anything special. And they've also got Higuain still there, who's basically going to be Messi's shadow of horror. That's how it works.
Okay.
Dustin Johnson is the new number one. Well, he's back to world number one in golf. I mean, how's this for a rock star finish? He won by 6 shots, but not only that, he eagled the last hole. He hit a 9-9 straight in the hole to win the golf tournament. So 19 under par, he wins by 6 over Putnam, and he'll go into the US Open very much the favorite. He's back to world number one, so Justin Thomas slips down to number two, and he will be grouped up with Tiger Woods for the first two rounds. Getting to that for as we get closer to the Thursday. But I wouldn't suggest putting money in Ricky Fowler. He got engaged over the weekend. So his game's going to go to shit.
Okay.
I hate to say it. I love the guy. But he's just dropped a knee. So if he's going to win this week, I don't think so.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of mail for Ben.
Just don't think so. But if you do want to win a brand new driver on the YouTube channel right now at Follow the Bounce, you can play a US Open competition where you can win something special. Because that's what I want to do. I always want to give back. Speaking of giving back, we're into the World Cup right now. We're into the box playing rugby. It's a very exciting time of the year, as I keep telling Siot, which he always ignores me. But if you want to get more involved in the show, I've set up a WhatsApp line. So you can share your rants, your whatever you want. Just little voice notes. But bear in mind, I'm not going to play a 3-minute voice note. And even though you might think it really funny, especially after 4 beers, it's going to be 20 seconds at best. That number is 066-247-4504. No, that's not Anthea's number. This is a legit fan line number. 066-247-4504. Send what you like, and if it's really worthwhile, I'll put it onto the show. So like bringing like an Arsenal fan TV element onto the morning show here.
Yes. If you are a big sports fan and you want to argue with Ben, this is also the line.
Go for it. Also,
but give us that number again.
066-247-4504. This is a South African number, so plus the 27 if you're from overseas, of course.
All right.
Plus 2766. And bear in mind, if it's too long, it just won't get played. So okay. Go ahead.
There we are. Ben, both a veiled threat and an invitation. He's the only person who can do that.
Balance.
Make you feel both welcome and not at all welcome in the same sentence. All right, very nice. We've got to get excited about this World Cup because I didn't realize it was so close, even though Ben's been giving us a countdown.
Thursday.
Yeah, it's all happening. First, let's get to Anthea and see what she has for us in the money shots. She works hard for the money. Yes, she does so hard for it, honey. Oh, she works hard for the money. So you better treat her right. hard for the money. For the money.
So he better treat her right.
Yes. There she is. Anthea, ooh. Good morning.
Good morning. That's got to be one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's one of the better ones.
For sure.
She works hard for the money. Money shot today. It's Monday, so what do we have on the agenda?
Yeah, it was a pretty tough week last week, I'm afraid. GDP contracted by 2.2% in the first quarter. So, of course, everyone's up in arms. I mean, this is off a previous 3.1% expansion. So I know everyone's really upset about this, but actually, if you break it down, you'll see the different parts are kind of agriculture is the big one, and mining. Those were horrible. Those were just absolutely awful. But other than that, and I guess government spending too much money on themselves again probably is not great. But, you know, finance, manufacturing kind of held its own a little bit. And you have to wonder, like, kind of where this comes from. And actually, it's the quarter where we all started talking about expropriation of land without compensation,
yep,
right?
That's it.
So just think about it. If you're a farmer or if you're an outside investor and you want to be investing in this country and you think land is going to be taken away without compensation, are you going to invest?
Hell no.
Exactly.
It's straightforward, you would think.
So I would say there's a perfect correlation almost. Anyway, that sent the rand to 13.38 against the US dollar.
We were
last
doing so
week
well.
This time. 12, where were we last week? 12.76, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
It's still over 13 at the moment, which is not great. Of course, the weaker rand helped the JSE because it was up 2% for the week, which is nice. So we started June on the JSE. We started June off on a positive note, up about, where were we now? 3.5%, I'd say.
Okay.
So that's quite nice. I'm quite relieved after May's down 4.5%. So you know that saying, sell in May and go away?
Yeah.
Don't believe it. You would have missed out on the June rally.
Okay.
And then...
Look how excited Anthea is.
Anthea's sayings are the best.
Yeah.
And then Steinhoff. We have to talk about Steinhoff. They got thrown a lifeline last week by their creditors. So their creditors sent them a letter of support, in inverted commas, saying that we will subordinate our debt. In other words, we won't call our debt. It's to the tune of, let me remember this number, I think it was like 138 million euros or something.
Oof.
Yeah, it's not bad. There are a couple of, caveats, if you like, where they're not allowed to issue more shares and they're not allowed to get deeper into debt. It does, however, and this is the part that I'm finding very interesting. And I'm speculating a little bit here, because imagine you're a company, Steinhoff, and you owe these people lots of money, but because of what's happened, you don't actually have the money to pay them. I think what would have happened is the distressed debt hedge funds would have gone to the banks who would have held the debt and said, we'll pay you 50 cents on the euro, we'll take over your debt and we'll collect it when we're good and ready. Then what these distressed debt hedge funds do is they go to Steinhoff and say, we won't call the debt, but you have to pay us a 50% contingency fee upfront. So they take their 50% contingency fee, they still owe 100% of the debt. They've only paid 50 cents on the euro, so they're in the trade for zero, basically.
Wow.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
That's some serious accounting. I mean.
And then any money they get paid back on this debt is pure profit.
That sounds like a very clever plan.
We love distressed debt fund hedge funds because they're clever. They do like the whole structuring thing.
That's very clever. I don't understand. Where does the debt go?
So to the hedge fund. So the hedge fund now holds the debt.
Yeah.
So Steinhoff owes the hedge fund the debt.
Yeah.
The hedge fund has paid the bank 50 cents on the euro. So the bank has taken a 50% haircut.
Because they didn't want to take the whole 100% debt.
Risk, right. Exactly.
Okay, I've got you. Okay, so, and then whatever they get paid back is just a bonus.
Absolutely, pure profit.
Jesus.
And of course, the problem for Steinhoff is now they've paid 50% contingency fee up front. And if they do plan to pay back the whole 100%, well,
that's
they're
brilliant.
Paying 150% for their debt.
Very clever.
But there you go. The share was up in Europe. Steinhoff was up in Europe by 48% on whenever this happened, Thursday.
Wow.
Crazy is that, because they got given a lifeline, basically.
It's amazing.
And then Celsi are taking ICASA to court because ICASA put in regulations where they said they weren't allowed data to expire. They had to charge X amount. They couldn't overcharge people for data, blah, blah, blah. You know the whole story, right? I mean, you're probably more familiar
and that,
with this.
That whole, what do they call it? Some other fees. There was those interconnect fees, and ICASA has been making a whole lot of rules.
That's right. And they gave the telcos a month to comply, and of course they didn't. And a day before that happened, Michael Jordan launched Rain Mobile.
Right, which is a new competitor on the market.
It's which only
is,
data.
Which has made Cell C and Vodacom and MTN very unhappy.
Yeah, very unhappy because no contracts, no expiry of the data, and 1 gig costs you 50 rand. So.
Which is much undercut their position.
But I think, and I think people haven't noticed this, actually, Telkom, there's a bit of a war on data at the moment, price war.
Good.
So Telkom
couldn't come too soon.
Are making, I saw a special offer for 28 rand a gig. I think it was limited, a limited period only, but that's the point, you know. So for us, the consumer, fantastic, right?
Yeah, like, sure.
I'm sick of paying excess for data. I'm done with this. But if you're holding a telco's company, your earnings are certainly going to be under pressure.
Okay, well, it's about time.
Yeah, for us.
Yeah, but even if you're holding them, you've been profiteering for a long time.
This is true, right?
Take your profits.
I think Telkom's still on like a 7% dividend yield or something ridiculous.
I don't feel sorry for them at all.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, Ben.
I was flipping through the Sunday Times yesterday while having lunch. It was there. And there was this big open letter from the CEO of Telkom to the president, basically saying, open up the industry. We're looking at the new industrial revolution. It's all about being online. So let's make it better. Basically just throwing the ball in your court saying, we're ready to be innovative. How about you guys catch the hell up?
Well, what does he expect the president to do?
Well, there's so many limitations in this place with the broadband.
Yes, and spectrum.
Find my right words. The spectrum, that kind of stuff. And government could do a whole bunch more to get us on the grid, so to speak, of the next industrial revolution, as they point out in this big long letter. So it's quite a ballsy kind of stance to
take. That's interesting.
That's exciting.
I do like the CEO of Telkom, by the way. I think he's one of the smarter people in South African business. And not afraid, clearly, to voice his opinion on these things. Okay, but so Cell C are the ones who are looking for court interdict against ICASA.
Yes, because they said they're not compliant, and ICASA only gave them a month to comply, and that wasn't enough for them. That's
okay.
basically what
and
they're saying.
And how does this impact on Rain? I don't understand. Is this just
I think it's the other way around. Rain is impacting on the other telcos. So this is the problem, right? Rain are coming in. And they're coming in compliant.
Right.
That's what it is. Where the others aren't compliant, they're like, well, we are compliant and we're not charging too much. No contract fees. We're great for the consumer. I think it's very exciting.
It is exciting. And Michael Jordan has proven he can do this stuff.
Yeah. And he's also the guy working on Bank Zero, don't forget.
I know. I saw him tweeting about it yesterday.
Yeah. Very excited, isn't he, about all these things?
Plenty of new things happening. Well, this is very bad news. Didn't we keep talking about disruption? Months ago, we started talking about disruption in banking and financial services and telcos. And look, now it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
While we're talking about techs, please can we talk about global tech companies, because when last week the rest of the market was very volatile, tech companies outperformed phenomenally. So the tech indices shot the lights out, basically. And it's really being held up by the FANGs, you know the FANGs, Facebook, Apple,
Google,
Netflix, and Google, right?
Oh.
You didn't know this, Sia?
No.
Sia doesn't listen to me, does he?
No, that is the term I'm using, the fangs. Okay.
Yeah. Facebook, Apple, Netflix. That's the first time you mentioned fangs.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, my word. I'm so sorry. I should have done this last year.
Facebook, Apple, Netflix, and Google.
My apologies.
The fangs.
Okay. Pay attention, because the Asian tech companies are called bats. So it's Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, and Taiwan Semiconductor.
Okay.
And those are the big ones.
Two terms to use in casual conversations this week.
Fangs and bats.
Yeah.
And you'll really impress your friends.
And so I had a quick look at kind of where earnings are and what's going on, because we've been watching it over the months. But I wanted kind of a consolidated picture. And this is just like just top line, right? So Facebook at their last results posted revenue of $12 billion, which is 50% up year on year to the previous quarter, right?
Sure.
I mean, they're getting double-digit user growth. Earnings per share, they came out at $1.69, compared to what we were expecting of $1.35. So they're just beating expectations continuously. Apple, same story. Remember, they had their problem with iPhone.
Yep.
But even so, they're doing a $100 billion capital return program. In other words, they're buying back shares. Also beat earnings, 273 versus what we were expecting of 267. And I know these numbers, like 6 cents, seems a little, but considering there's millions of shares, it's actually a lot. And also, they've got the ability to diversify into products and services, and they're just doing lots of things. Netflix earnings weren't so great, but again, user growth, phenomenal. Amazon, I don't even need to talk to you about that, right? Like what did Warren Buffett said, you do not want to give Jeff Bezos a 7-year head start, because things were difficult in the beginning, but he really is taking things by storm now, taking over the world and retail. So basically what I'm saying is, just even though we keep expecting really high numbers for the earnings, these companies keep beating it. And also, I was looking at just tech. I was just doing a lot of reading generally last week about tech. And one of the interesting things, which I'm not sure we have spoken about before, are adoption rates. I found this graph. There are lots of graphs, lots of tables, but this is an interesting one. To see the adoption rates of tech companies in the US for a company or some sort of technology, not a company, sorry, technology, to be taken up by 25% of the population.
Yes.
It took 45 years for 25% of the US population to get electricity. It took 35 for the telephone,
mm-hmm.
31 for radio,
mm-hmm.
27 for television.
Mm-hmm.
15 for the PC.
So it's getting shorter and shorter.
Exactly.
The window is narrowing here.
That's exactly my point. You've picked it up exactly.
But what's keep so going all the way down to the bottom.
Okay. Mobile phones, 12.
Yeah.
Web, 8. Smartphones, 5.
Hmm. Yeah. And YouPorn, 1 year.
Oh, hang on. Let me Google that. So, very fast adoption rates is where we're going with this. But thanks for throwing that in, Gareth.
YouPorn, 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I watched something very interesting on Netflix, something called AlphaGo, because you know this board game called Go. It's supposed to be the most difficult, intellectually stimulating board game in the world, where Google's DeepMind built
artificial intelligence.
Yes, a player to play against the world's best mm-hmm. Korean Go player. It was interesting because he. Must I tell you how many he won and lost? No, I won't, because that's spoiling it, right? Mm. But the point is about artificial intelligence that I'm trying to get to is that I think you, as human beings, we're limited by programming and building computers because we only know so much. We can't teach somebody more than we know.
A computer can teach you everything it knows if you're another computer, and you can learn more.
But the computer has to learn that from somewhere. Mm. And what's happening at the moment, apparently, in artificial intelligence is that because individuals or people can have limited amounts of knowledge to teach computers, they're learning from the internet.
Correct.
How nervous are you right about now?
They're learning from each other. So here's the thing. A computer that is working twice as fast as its previous generation computer is now able within a moment to be 4 times as fast. A moment after, it's become 2 times as fast. Now it's 4, then it's 8, then it's 16, then it's 32, and so on.
And last year, more information was put onto the internet than the entire internet since it started.
There we go.
Oh, man.
How much information is that? But my concern, of course, is what sort of information?
Some of it's rubbish.
Kim Kardashian obviously. Information.
Some of it is rubbish. But,
did I just say that?
But if you think about programming and mathematics and science and that kind of thing, that body of knowledge is just increasing and increasing in value.
Yeah.
So it's terrific.
I think it's increasing slower than the junk information.
It is.
So I don't know
for humans, but not
for computers.
If you're a computer and you're trying to figure out the extrapolations of a certain equation, I mean, you can keep doing that ad infinitum, and you don't have to sleep like a human does, and you don't have to check whether you remember something that you did back in the beginning of the equation.
Mm.
If you're a computer, you know it, you know it, you know it, you know it. You keep knowing it. And you can build on that with other things that you know and learn along the way.
And half the thing with solving mathematical equations is iterations, right? And
correct.
Computers can run iterations.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's kind of what's been keeping me busy last week.
Been tech worrying about artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, you saw Cyril Ramaphosa got invited to the G7, which for the first time in 7 years. Yeah, so very excited about that. I haven't seen much news on it. The whole Angela Merkel, Donald Trump, Justin Trudeau thing has taken over the news from G7. But it will be keen to see what he comes up with and if he's sold South Africa, because we really need that.
Well, then there was a story that I did want your comments on. I know that we're running a little bit late now, but it's something that's probably quite interesting. In the Mail and Guardian, which I do my best not to read as often as possible, but there it is. The broke SAA, which we know has no money, right, and has helped to bring the economy to this current juncture where we know that, what we're 2.2% contraction. They are paying their executives even more. They are paying the CEO, Vuyani Jarana, they're paying him 6.7 million rand.
No.
Yeah, a year. 6.7 million rand a year. Mpati Kofa, who is the new acting head of legal, 4.2 million rand. How's that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and there are two new people in the CEO's office who are both being paid over 2.5 million rand each. That is Robert Newsom, who's the acting head of risk and compliance. He's getting 2.5 million rand a year. And a guy called Thabang Motsoi, who's getting 4 million rand a year for being their regulatory policy officer.
So now we know what they did when they went for a 1.8 billion rand emergency debt facility, right? I mean, that's what they're spending it on,
right.
Basically.
People.
Their current debt is sitting at 14 billion rand.
That's right.
Record. Wow.
So there we go. Something to think about.
Jeez.
Thanks very much, Gareth.
Thanks, Anthea. There we go. That's a money shot for you. 8 minutes after seven, when we come back in a minute or two, we will have our guest, who is a polyamorist. And we've also got some news for you. But first, Sia, what have you got for us in Said by Sia this morning?
Well, this morning is...
I do have music for you.
Oh, thank you. There we go. This morning is very cool because, once again, South Africa, you are showing off in the best of ways, and particularly for education. Now, science and math subjects are now getting a technological boost thanks to, wait for it, virtual reality.
Oh, yeah?
There are new VR programs that are now allowing students in South Africa to see the likes of the inner workings of a cell and even other substances. Now, we've all heard the statistic by now that in the next 10 years, 80% of all jobs will require skills in math, science, and technology. And because we have to keep up with that, the Western Cape and KZN provincial governments currently are in talks to pilot the introduction of virtual reality learning solutions in selected government schools. Now, this is obviously a new way of teaching and learning through virtual reality, but it's seemingly about to close the gap between knowledge and understanding. Because when you really start to think about it, virtual reality can take pupils to the likes of New York City to see the Statue of Liberty, or they can be in a train, or they can now even learn about the concept of relative motion or step inside a green leaf to see the production of oxygen through photosynthesis. There we go. Photosynthesis. Now, Tanya Jackman, who is the event director of EduWeek Africa, says, if you plot historic innovation on a timeline, the results are astounding. Innovation is happening more rapidly than ever before. So she's speaking on the likes of how massive this is and how great it will be for South African pupils. Now, initial results from the inclusion of this technology in South African classrooms has led to a positive development in learner behavior and attitude, with 70% of learners indicating that the addition of virtual reality to the syllabus would motivate them to take science and maths related subjects in the future. This is amazing, and look, we still have a long way to go with our education system.
A lot of people choose not to do maths and science because they think it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's our biggest obstacle, is that people want to do easy subjects. I suppose that tells you something about people rather than maths and science.
True.
Path of least resistance type stuff.
Yeah. I really think about how much I struggled with science and I really wasn't interested. But when you see it in front of you, when you see the reactions from the different chemicals, you know, that application and understanding really does help you out. So if virtual reality is the answer as well, it would be great. And as I was saying, you know, we have a long way to go with our education system in the country. But if we're making steps like this, then I think we're in a good path. So that's your Set by Sia for this Monday morning.
All right. Thank you very much, Sia. And time now is 11 after 7. If you've got something in your mind, there's something you want to talk about, something going on that you need to get off your chest, you know what to do. Call us on 0861-555-189. And if you'd like to WhatsApp us, you can do that on 0797482090.
This is CliffCentral.com.